The Book of Wisdom, quote, "Ask any wise man what he desires most, and he will more than likely say, more wisdom," quote by Napoleon Hill. Here's the summary. Wisdom is knowing and doing today what feels good tomorrow. Unfortunately, most people find it easier to be wise for others than themselves. Wisdom is simple, not complex. It is available to all because it comes through the superconscious. In this book, we will look at the meaning of being wise and how to develop that attribute. Enlightenment is knowing that everything is perfect just as it is right now. Everything is perfect just as it is. The knowledge of this enables you to live in total serenity and peace of mind. Everything is perfect. This may seem a contradiction or a fallacy to you at this present time. How, you might say? Can everything be perfect when I have this toothache or cancer or have no money or I'm lonely? Where is the perfection in war and hate? Let me give you an example to illustrate the meaning of perfection. Before the 19th century, the quill was the principal writing instrument. It was perfect. Next came the fountain pen. It was perfect. Then came the ballpoint pen. Again, perfect. Now in laboratories, scientists are developing the laser beam pen, which can write on paper without burning it and write on steel. It, too, is perfect. There is a big difference between the quill and the laser beam pen, yet each is perfect. Each is perfect because each was an idea in some person's mind, which became a creation, physical reality. The perfection is in the creation from the idea to the end result. Of course, there has been tremendous improvement from quill to fountain pen, to ballpoint pen, to laser beam pen. Seeing different end products, we might be tempted to say the quill is not perfect because it can be improved upon. Enlightenment is knowing that perfection lies in the creative process, and therefore, the quill is perfect. Similarly, war, disease, hate, as well as love, cooperation, and health are perfect creations. Everything is perfect just as it is right now. A step further than enlightenment is wisdom. Wisdom is knowing how to change something to make it better. Wisdom comes by saying, let's do those things that are creative and productive for tomorrow. The Eastern teachings say, if it feels good, do it. Most people misinterpret this statement. Instead of hearing the truth in this statement, they hear, if it feels good physically, I can do it. Or, if it feels good intellectually, I can do it. Or, if it feels good today, I can do it. Thus, many people do things today and regret those things tomorrow. Abuse of alcohol and drugs are examples of today pleasures that become tomorrow regrets. Revenge, hate, jealousy, envy are other examples. People use the phrase, it feels good, as a license to do all things, regardless of whether such action leads to enlightenment or enslavement. In truth, the statement should read, if it feels good tomorrow, do it. That means the criterion for deciding to do or not to do a given thing is not the immediate pain or pleasure produced, but rather the future benefits produced for yourself and mankind. Some people argue that doing today what feels good tomorrow is like living in the future. I say not. A wise person understands that time is his most precious commodity. If you must work out and overcome regrets, you are wasting this most precious commodity. You are spending it needlessly. We are given only so much time in this life to accomplish the work that we have to do. What we were or did before this birth is not important, nor is it important what happens after this lifetime. What is important is what we do now and with the time we are given now. Whatever the hereafter may be, I'm convinced that our present life and accomplishments will play a part. Otherwise, there would be no point in living, no point in facing the problems, the struggles, and the pain. If the hereafter is so beautiful, then why not just lie down and die now? Why even go through this period of time as a human being? Wisdom is knowing that you know that there is a purpose for being here now. Knowing that you have a destiny. I don't mean being a pilot or a carpenter or a salesman or any form of an occupation. Rather, I refer to the destiny of being of service to mankind, that destiny of becoming enlightened, of becoming all that we can become. And by doing so, we can move onward to a higher level of being. I don't necessarily imply any form of reincarnation. We don't know if reincarnation exists, nor can we prove it. Does reincarnation exist? I don't know. People dream dreams, do age regression, see things in altered states of consciousness, and think it's reincarnation. But is it? It could be telepathy. It could be astral projection. It could be precognition in reverse. It could be a form of time warp. I simply don't know, and I don't care. It does not really matter. Generally, people who are into reincarnation are trying to find an escape from the now. They are looking for an easy solution to why they are the way they are. They're not accepting the responsibility for their own life. The truth is, you are the sum total of your thoughts. You are responsible now. If you don't like the way you feel, change the way you think. Enlightenment is knowing the validity of this truth. Wisdom is knowing how to change to make your life more fulfilling within the span of your given time. There is nothing mysterious or difficult about life. The only thing complex is what we make complex. Being happy, healthy is natural, and therefore simple. The things that seem complex are the things that we do not understand. Because we don't understand, do not have a clear mental picture, we suppose that it is beyond our understanding. This is false reasoning. When something appears complex or hard to accomplish, all that is needed to make it simple is a clear mental picture of what needs to be done. Let me give you an illustration of this using the space program. Is it possible to put a man on the moon? Yes, of course it is, because we've already done so. If it were to start from scratch now, knowing what we know now, how difficult would it be? I say it would be easy, simple. Compared to the very first time, putting a man on the moon would now be simple. The steps, the things that need to be done, are known. It would only be a matter of time of doing the things right in the right order, and all this is already spelled out. Even you or I could do it, given time, materials, money, and sufficient desire to do so. I don't say this to distract from the genius or dedicated work of the scientists. In doing it in the first time and in refining and simplifying the process, they shorten the time span so that each of us can achieve more. Once operators and trained personnel were necessary to make every phone call, now we do it with the touch of a finger. Someday, with similar ease, my children or grandchildren may go to the moon. Their generation will consider going to the moon simple. They will have other unknowns to call complex. So whether something is simple or complex depends upon how we perceive it. If we perceive it as an unknown, then we see it as complex, hard, difficult, and say, I can't do it. The wise person does not know how to do everything. He does know he can learn how to do everything. Thus, his vocabulary does not include I can't. This is a simple truth, is it not? The only way I know to acquire wisdom is to confront the truth. The truth is available everywhere. Truth always is, always was, and always will be. However, the truth is no respecter of persons. By that I mean the truth is totally fair and equal to all. Black, white, yellow, green, Christian, Jew, Buddhist, atheist, Muslim, or whatever. The truth is the way that it is. The truth is often harsh. If you move against the truth, contrary to what is, life can be very miserable. This will produce a life of darkness, of fear, of bondage. When you begin to confront the truth, work with it, and use it positively, then you acquire wisdom. Wisdom does not come instantaneously. It is a matter of degree. The more open, the more accepting of the truth, the faster wisdom will enter into your life. One of the wisest men I ever knew was my tutor. He was constantly confronting the truth. He was constantly checking the way it was. This was quite often painful, especially in the beginning. He had to confront poverty and say, I created this. My thoughts, my thinking did this. I am responsible. That is what he did, and by doing so, he gained wisdom. This may sound easy to do on paper, but believe me, it is the most difficult task you will face. Have you ever rode downstream and then turned around and tried to go up? Have you ever ridden a motorcycle down a steep hill and then turned around and tried going up that same hill? It is very difficult. The tide in most people's lives is toward negativity, toward failure, toward bondage, toward guarantees. To face the truth and say, that is negative, or I am a failure, or I am in bondage, or I do not want guarantees, is to turn around and face the tide. Then to create positivity, success, freedom, and opportunity against this tide is an uphill battle. At the present moment, we have a relatively large number of people in this country facing the tide. A lot of people are into self-realization, awareness, meditation, and other growth groups. It's become a large industry. This is an expected thing and has happened throughout history. Every generation, every 40 to 50 years, we witness a form of revival, a spinning off and welling up of religious thoughts. Old dogmas are broken, new concepts challenge men's thoughts. In our current generation, the self-enlightenment, self-actualization, and self-realization groups are a result of such inner searchings. Every time the consciousness is raised a little, a large mass of people become less superstitious, less fearful, and more in control of their lives. They accept more responsibility for where they are, and in so doing, they gain more wisdom. These individuals recognize that they are manufacturing plants, that they have created what the world knows today. The thoughts they hold and charge with energy become reality. This is the environment necessary for wisdom. It is also very painful. Painful because of the numerous negative products that have been produced. Products include wars, prejudice, violence, broken marriages, battered children, riots. On a personal level, our products include our physical bodies, our relationships, our careers, our role of a parent, or whatever else we're doing. Quite often, we see these things as imperfect. Poverty, sickness, overweight, bad relationships. It's painful to accept responsibility because it affects our ego. We allow it to affect our ego. Rather than taking such information in as data, like reading a gas meter, we instead use it to judge our okayness, to judge our value as a person. That is why it is painful and hard for a person to take responsibility. The not okay buttons learned as a child get punched. When you take responsibility, you have to say, gee, I thought I had it all together, and now I realize that I really messed up. I haven't done the job right. That is the hard thing to do. Let me give you an illustration from my life of what I mean by facing the truth and show you how this is a reflection of wisdom. Up until I was 23 years of age, I had never stood before a class or a group to speak. For all practical purposes, I was an introvert, a very quiet person. I kept mostly to myself. Of course, I had friends and talked to people, but never in a group. If there were three and the other two conversed, I was the quiet one. I was also very careful to whom I spoke. My old programs were less than feelings as a result of being heckled for the way I would talk, for my Oklahoma accent, for stuttering. It was emotionally very painful to talk, so I refused to talk. I was afraid to talk. Yet, I knew inside of me I had something to say. I didn't know what it was, and still I knew I had to say it. I had a vision of lots of people, a multitude, and I had that something to say to them. A psychoanalyst might analyze that feeling and say I had an ego problem or had a desire for recognition or had a need for esteem. I think that's just a lot of intellectualizing. I feel I had a need to get what was inside out, not for applause or power, but for a need of self-expression. I didn't know what to say, but I did know I had to speak. The recognition of the feeling and the knowing that I had to do something about it was like turning around in that stream. I realized I was going with the current, with the old programs, and had to do something about it. I confided in a friend. He mentioned something called Toastmasters. I don't even remember the man's name, but he was one of those good people who really care. He talked to me about Toastmasters, and I said, yes, I'd really like to do that. I think he knew that I really wanted to go, and a couple of days later, he came by to pick me up. But he really scared me by telling me it was all professional people and businessmen like myself. At the age of 23, I honestly didn't think I was very professional. I guess I didn't feel all that good about myself. I was a sporting goods store manager at the time, but had no college degree. In fact, I'd been thrown out of college. So I didn't see myself the way he saw me. He had told me about the professionalism, about the speeches given, about the critiques. In short, he told me too much. I had too much data and was petrified. So I said to myself, you mean I'm going to have to get up in front of all those doctors and lawyers at a dinner meeting? Some 30 men and talk? Well, he came by to pick me up, and I had to work. I created having to work on purpose. Being in charge of the store, it was very easy for me to create that. So we talked again, and he agreed to come by the next week. Sure, I'm going. I want to go. I assured him. The next week I got sick. To make a long story short, all you have to do is imagine all the reasons for 26 times why you would not go. 26 weeks, 6 months to be exact, every Wednesday this man came after me, and every week I had a reason for not going. But I wanted to go badly. Finally, one week he didn't come by. I really felt bad, so bad that I went to the Toastmasters meeting. I sat in my car for a while and almost didn't go in. Guests are not asked to participate, so I enjoyed it. I enjoyed listening to the other people perform. They were hard on each other. There was no such thing as a perfect presentation. Somebody could find a flaw, and they would let you know about it. To join the club, you must attend for 3 weeks and then give an icebreaker speech. That is a 5 to 7 minute speech about yourself. So I didn't join the club. I just went. I went for 3 or 4 months, and they kept asking me to join, but I always had a reason. Finally, I said I would join, and in fact, I had been preparing my icebreaker speech since the first meeting I attended. I had it all written out and had practiced it to myself in front of mirrors and while I was driving. I was set. The speech was 7 minutes exactly. It was not the typical icebreaker, though. It was very philosophical, very poetic. It was written in the third person about this person who was speaking and about what this child had experienced. I ended with page 60 of Khalil Gibran's The Prophet on Talking. When you meet your friend on the roadside or in the marketplace, let the spirit in you move your lips and direct your tongue. Let the voice within your voice speak to the ear of his ear. For his soul will keep the truth of your heart as the taste of the wine is remembered. When the color is forgotten and the vessel is no more. The evening I was to do my icebreaker, an unusual thing happened. Another club was there. There were almost 100 people, all strangers. I was so petrified I couldn't eat. In all my life, this was the most terrifying moment I have known. I have had pistols held to my head and knives at my throat. I've had my throat cut open with the sharpened teeth of an aluminum comb, and I was afraid. I have been in brawls, gang fights, fights with sharpened chains, a lot of bad situations. But that night, in front of 100 or so professional men, I was the most fearful. The night dragged on endlessly, or so it seemed, for the icebreaker speeches, namely me, were the very last thing. Throughout the evening, the members would compete for awards given that evening and cumulative awards given once a year. The most coveted award was the Toastmaster of the Year award. The competition was fierce. The two clubs were evaluating each other. Finally, 3 hours later, totally petrified, I was called to give my speech. I don't know how I got up or moved or stood. The reality was I gave a 7-minute speech in less than 4 minutes. Not once did I pause. I do not know who understood me. Blank stares were all I saw. Normally, a person given an icebreaker talks about the children and his wife and job, and I spewed out philosophy. Totally blank stares. Then the evaluation came. The evaluator, who was from the other team, was an Air Force officer, a fighter pilot. He was probably one of the most eloquent speakers I've ever heard. I guess what made him so very, very special was that he was so very kind. I remember him saying such things as, "It is refreshing to have such a poetic genius to deliver such a timely and valuable message." He went on and on. He made me sound pretty. I soaked it up and I got active in Toastmasters. I took every opportunity to speak. I became the frantic. Every speech I delivered had a message. By the end of the year, people were coming to hear me. The attendance actually would go up at meetings where I was a speaker. The next year, I won the Toastmaster of the Year award. I'm very proud of that award. It represents a change in the course of my life. I had reached a major turning point. I was ready. I quit my job and moved to Texas that same year. Wisdom goes back to the time when I knew from feelings that I had to do something. And I did it. I did it well. I did what made me feel better tomorrow, even though it was very, very painful at the time. The result was beneficial. Doing those things today that feel good tomorrow. When I got to Texas, I joined 3 Toastmaster clubs so that I could become an even better speaker. Since then, I've become past president of 3 clubs. In fact, the pendulum swung too far. I became too polished. Never even said an ah. In Toastmasters, it costs 25 cents for each time that you say ah. I became too polished because the professionalism, the polish, began to interfere with the people comprehending the message. They began to listen to the voice tone and watch my hands, and by doing so, lost the message. "What a fantastic speaker you are," they would say. What refinement, what precision. Wisdom, again, was knowing where I was, knowing that I was not communicating. What I did not want was applause. I did not need the strokes. I knew I was a good speaker. What I did need was to communicate what was in my gut. So I began to unpolish the professional speaker image. Purposefully, I let Oz back in. Purposefully, I would make mistakes. And I still do so today. I do things that in the realm of the professional speaker are not acceptable. I do such things as thank an audience, or occasionally I will interject rough language to make a point. Communicating the message is more important to me than people's praise of how polished of a speaker I am. This, too, is a form of wisdom, knowing what is important and letting that predominate. There is a tendency to confuse the thinking process with wisdom. They're not the same, nor even related very much. To think is to have thoughts, ideas. Wisdom is in selecting only those thoughts which lead to a more productive life. Wisdom involves selecting, making decisions. Thinking, on the other hand, deals with data collection, organization, and use. The thinking processes are memory, the recall of data, organizing, grouping similar information together, generalizing, making statements about groups of data, deducting, deriving facts from generalizations, inducting, deriving a generalization from specific data, applying, taking information from one situation and using it in another. The processes of evaluating and judging go beyond just data. In these areas of mental processes, feelings and emotions enter. A jury makes a decision from facts and feelings, as every trial lawyer well knows. Still, this is not wisdom, for wisdom implies a higher power or source of direction. Thus, the decision of the jury will be wise or not, depending on the awareness of the individuals involved. Consider the story of the wisdom of Solomon. What was the wisdom of Solomon? I say Solomon's wisdom was the ability to get to the truth, to go beyond thinking and judging to the truth. When the two women stood before Solomon, each claiming the child, he didn't know which one was telling the truth, but he did know how to arrive at the truth. He said, in effect, divide the living child in two, and give half to one and half to the other. One woman said, fine, let it be done. The other woman said, oh no, give it to her. By this process, Solomon knew which was the real mother, for the real mother would never allow the child to be hurt. From this judgment, Solomon became famous, not from the judgment itself, but rather from the wisdom or God power that was displayed. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. 1 Kings 3:28. Wisdom is not dependent on the thinking processes. Even the most ignorant peasant can display wisdom. However, for those trained in the thinking processes, wisdom needs to be applied at every thinking level, selecting thoughts, selecting data, method of organizing, reaching conclusions, and forming judgments. The degree to which wisdom enters your thinking processes will be the degree to which you display power and become a positive leader. Wisdom is hindsight, 20/20 vision in forward motion. We are a vessel through which this power or wisdom flows. It will flow through us to the degree that we open ourselves to it. The amount of water flowing through a garden hose depends upon the opening of the valve. We are that garden hose. We must consciously open up, open that valve. The amazing part is that the more we use wisdom, the faster it flows through us. There is no limit to the amount of wisdom. You cannot use it up. Every human being has wisdom if he chooses to allow it to flow. All too often we know what is right, but we do what feels good today, or we do the wrong things out of habits and old programs. In doing so, we fail to use the wisdom in us, and thus violate the law of use. When you don't use it, you lose it. The more you use wisdom, the more you get. The less you use wisdom, the less you have. How do you get more wisdom? By using what you already have. SciWorld is a vehicle to teach you how to use what you already have in a better, more productive way. That is wisdom. You will not necessarily become more knowledgeable. Knowledgeable implies knowing and the thinking processes. You may become more knowledgeable, but that is a fringe benefit. Psi shows you how to turn on the valve to start the flow. It's entirely up to you to turn it on and keep it open. When you know what is right and choose to follow a different course, you are turning off that valve. For example, you know that if you drink too much, you'll be ineffective at work tomorrow. You will not be creative. You will feel miserable. Yet perhaps you go ahead and do it. Possessing the knowledge, knowing what is going to happen, is not enough. Wisdom is making that conscious decision for tomorrow. Wisdom is saying, hey, wait a minute. That will feel lousy tomorrow. I choose to do today what will feel good tomorrow. The use of drugs is another excellent example of the difference between wisdom and knowledge. Drugs used in one way save lives, ease pain, help people live fuller, healthier lives. Used in another way, drugs lead to addiction, dependence, depression, and even death. Knowledge is knowing what drug to use to get a specific result. The drug addict or pusher may be just as knowledgeable as a leading physician. The wisdom of the latter, however, directs him to apply drugs only toward a positive end. Wisdom is pulling all the pieces together. The thinking processes, awareness of emotions, decision-making, and choosing in such a way as to create a better tomorrow, a more positive tomorrow. All that we know of the outside world comes through perception. Our ability to distinguish and know by means of the senses and mental processes. All of what we call experience is really nothing more than accumulated perceptions. What is a perception? You see something with your eye, you feel the wet grass, you taste a lemon tart, you hear a dog bark, you smell a rose, and your mind says, this is real. Is it? Have you felt, seen, tasted, smell, and heard these things, and by doing so, you've admitted them symbolically into your inner world? What comes into your inner world will depend upon the keenness of your sensing, your attention to and awareness of detail. Thus, the perception becomes a work of art rather than hard, fast reality. Some people's roses have red petals. Others have roses whose petals are delicately shaded from scarlet to deep burgundy with flecks of yellow. The outside world is a picture painted in your inner world. You are the artist that created it. How is your picture? Is it rich in detail, bright with colors, exciting and full of motion? Is it unique and expressive? Or have you chosen to perceive the dull, the lifeless, the mundane? Your inner world, your perception, is the greatest of your works. In fact, all that you ever can or will accomplish can only be known to you in this inner world. The outer world exists only as you perceive it to be. Wisdom is an inner knowing that comes directly into your inner world from the superconscious. It's as real as an apple or a cat or a tree. Because it doesn't come through the five senses that perceive the outer world, you may have thought you didn't have it. You do. Everyone does. If you accept the Trinity of Consciousness concept, then you must acknowledge the existence of your own wisdom. Wisdom springs from the superconscious and flows through the subconscious into your consciousness, your inner world of thoughts, your ideas, and your perceptions. Now, if you choose to limit your inner world to only those perceptions from the five physical senses, then you'll have no feeling of wisdom, nor the peace of mind it brings. Remember, reality is what you choose to perceive and act upon as real. Acknowledge wisdom as real. Use it, and you have it. Consider the following exercise. What would it be like if you had no senses, if you were born without any of the five senses? Take a moment now and imagine what this type of existence would be like for you. Remember, you would have awareness of the superconscious and all your inner senses. Then, one at a time, add your five senses. Taste first, then smell, touch, hearing, and finally sight. Does one sense overshadow the others? For most people, hearing and sight are predominant. Do your five physical senses overshadow the inner senses? In a crowded commuter train or bus after a long day of details, how difficult is it to hear the inner voice of wisdom, and even more so to follow it? The conscious mind is the key. The conscious mind must make the decision to allow wisdom to appear. We must open the valve before the water will flow through the hose. It's never a matter of being there, but rather always a question of permitting it to come through. Wisdom is always there for our use. But if we don't use it, we lose it. The more you use it, the wiser you become. You don't find people who are very wise who are instantly enlightened or instantly made wise. It always comes through a period of trials over a length of time. Even Jesus experienced this. When approached on the road, Jesus responded, "My time is not yet come." John 7:6. He had to have years of preparation until he was 30 before he became a wise man. In every case, we find it this way. Solomon, Disraeli, King. Every time we find a wise person, we see an accumulation over a long period of time of conscious decisions which have been right. The wise have encountered the negative thoughts and the temptations, which are illusions of what is good. The illusion of good is what seems good now but is not good tomorrow. These were the temptations of Jesus and of every man or woman who has followed or preceded him. To be aware is to have knowledge of good and evil. To be wise is to consciously choose the good. Here's a quote. "Talent is nothing but long patience. Go to work. Everything which one desires to express must be looked at with sufficient attention, and during a sufficiently long time, to discover in it some aspect which no one has yet seen or described. In everything, there is still some spot unexplored, because we are accustomed only to use our eyes with recollection of what others before us have taught on the subject which we contemplate. The smallest object contains something unknown. Find it. To describe a fire that flames, and a tree on a plain, look. Keep looking at that flame and that tree until in your eyes they have lost all resemblance to any other tree or any other fire. That is the way to be original." Quote from the teachings of Flaubert.